Hi, I'm Austin Pendleton, and I'm talking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By at UNC. I'm about to go over to the Pangea Cabaret Space, P-A-N-G-E-A, on Lower 2nd Avenue to do a cabaret with my friend Barbara Blyer. We'll talk about that when I'm talking to Rabbi Saul Solomon at UNC.
Oh, shalom, shalom, my friends, shalom, my enemies. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am delighted and thrilled to be talking to someone who has been in one of the actual cornerstones of Judaism. Now, I don't mean the Torah, and I don't mean Israel. I mean Fiddler on the Roof. This man was in the original production of Fiddler on the Roof. He played Motel the Tailor, and you can hear him in the original cast album. Also, he did an off-Broadway show called The Last Sweet Days of Isaac. He's a playwright. He wrote some very good plays called Orson's Shadow and Uncle Bob. He's directed a show, The Runner Stumbles, on Broadway. He was Tony nominated for directing a revival of The Little Foxes featuring none other than Maureen Stapleton and Elizabeth Taylor. He's also won an Obie Award for directing Chekhov. He's won Drama Desk. So much is going on with him, and it never stops. Right now, he's doing two things at once. He's directing a play for the Mint Theater called A Day by the Sea, and he's appearing at a cabaret at the Pangea Cabaret Space on 11th Street. So please, will you welcome to the neighborhood, Austin Pendleton. Shalom!
Thank you. Shalom to you too, Rabbi.
Oh, shalom. It's good to talk to you. So let me ask you a question. With the name Austin Pendleton, you do not sound Jewish. Are you?
That's true. I'm not.
Oh.
I'm not Jewish.
What did you feel when you were initially auditioning or trying to get into Fiddler on the Roof? Do you think that would be held against you, or did you try and learn a bit about Judaism and pronunciation and words before going for the role?
No, I was called in by a director I had worked with already, Jerome Robbins, you know. I had been the year before in a play he directed that ran off-Broadway called Oh Dad, Poor Dad, and Mama's Hung You in the Closet, and I'm Feeling So Sad.
I think they're reviving that next to the Arthur Copit play. I think that's actually getting a revival soon, is it? I could be wrong about that.
So, yeah, he was Frank Langella in the role of the mother, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, right. I mean, I can't wait to see that.
So you did Oh Dad, which was, despite the title, it was actually kind of a hit for the time. And then...
Yeah, we played it for about a year off-Broadway. And also in it were two great actresses, Jo Van Fleet and Barbara Harris.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we played that for about a year, and then a few months after that was over, I got this call again from Jerome Robbins to come and audition for Fiddler on the Roof. At that time, it wasn't called Fiddler on the Roof. The name of the show was, it was named after the leading character, the character of Tevye.
So
Tevye was the name of the show when I auditioned for it.
Did you know you were auditioning for Muttle, or did they tell you, was it a variety of characters you had been Perchik? What did they tell you?
He asked me to audition for Perchik.
Oh.
And he liked to audition people a lot of times. I auditioned six times for Oh Dad, Poor Dad. And so I auditioned six times for Perchik. And at the sixth audition, he said, and I really wanted that part of Perchik. And he said at the end of the sixth audition, he said, while you're here, why don't you read a scene from the part of Muddle? So I said, okay. I hadn't given it any thought at all. And then the next day, I got the part of Muddle.
Wow. Can't you have any memories of working with Jerome Robbins on both of those plays? Any anecdotes?
Well, he was... I mean, I owe my career to the man. Wow. I mean, he was, you know, as great a director as there's ever been. You can see from the variety between those two shows. Plus, of course, he did West Side Story and Gypsy, and he did all these ballets and everything. But he was a taskmaster. But he was brilliant. He was hard on you, but in a productive way. Some directors are hard on you just because they like to be hard on you.
Right, but he, you know, you knew he was working towards a goal, and you really wanted to keep him there.
And therefore you know, even when you got upset, you knew that he was pushing you to something more than you were giving. So, wait, what?
We should mention that Austin Pendleton is literally hailing a taxi, getting a cab to go to the Pangea Club as we are speaking. So if you hear extraneous noises out there, that is why. But yes, you're continuing about Jerome Robbins.
Yeah, and the two parts in Odette and Fiddler were very different. They had in common, they were kind of shy. Mm-hmm. But he would say to me during rehearsals for Fiddler, we have to break the image of the other show, meaning Odette Bourdette. Because the guy in Odette Bourdette is just totally collapses into himself in the course of the play. And the guy, the Taylor in Fiddler on the Roof, as everybody knows, survives and prevails against a lot of odds. So, although they both on the surface kind of shy and awkward, one has a will of steel. That would be Merle the Taylor.
Right, even a poor Taylor is entitled to some happiness.
Exactly. You know,
that line, yeah.
Yeah. And Jonathan, in Odette Bourdette, just doesn't make it to the far end of the pool. He's, in a way, he's already defeated before the play even begins. So, and then he falls in love with a girl, but he doesn't have any idea what to do about it. And whereas Merle the Taylor finds the resources to win the woman he loves against, you know, huge odds. At heart, they're very different people, and Billy kept just insisting on that. He said, no, you gotta be a person who fights. He liked the show Fiddler to be about people fighting for their lives.
Mm.
I mean, their inner lives, you know, as trying to adjust to the collapse of all their traditions and everything. That's what gave the show, as he directed it and helped to give it an outline, that's what gave it the power that it has.
Have you seen the current Fiddler on the Roof production on Broadway?
Yeah, I saw the opening night.
Oh. So what did you think?
I thought it was very exciting.
Because?
Well, the guy who plays Muddle the Taylor. Thought he was wonderful. But everybody was. It was a beautiful show. It's a very original production of it. They have their own take on it. And it was kind of thrilling to see that.
Now, can I... one last Fiddler question, and then I promise I'll let you talk about other, even non-Jewish things. But
also, I was in the Diary of Anne Frank, you know, with Natalie Portman.
Oh, you were Mr. Dussel in that.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that next, but I have to ask. You had a deal, everybody had to deal with Zero Mostel.
Yeah.
Genius on stage, but at what point did he start, if you want to use that term, going off the rails of giving out sports scores and of being zero-ish?
Well, I don't know. I found him, I had a sort of a unique, he was, I found him very liberating.
Oh.
I was a geek actor, you know, young actor who would get all uptight with, oh, do I have it right and all that. And he just was like this wind that blew open a door. And of course, the ways he would go off the rails would be different nights in different moments. But the overall core of the performance was entirely the same all the time. I mean, he was finally at heart that man.
Mm.
And so he would do these, let's call them riffs, although that's being a little euphemistic. They were improvs that, yes, sometimes are things that man would never, ever, ever have done or said. But then he would return, like on a dime, to the core of the scene. And the moments he had, of which there were quite a few, which were meant to be touching and serious, were devastatingly beautiful. All the time, every night. It was in some of the scenes that allowed for comedy that he allowed for either more comedy or a different kind of comedy.
Sure. No, absolutely. Can I ask, but off stage you got along? Was he personable? Was he...
I loved him.
Oh, beautiful. Good.
I just loved him. I don't think I even had an argument with him ever.
Oh, did you argue with Natalie Portman in The Diary of Anne Frank?
Absolutely not. Who would ever argue with Natalie Portman?
Of course not. How was that experience of doing that show, that revival?
Well, it was harrowing, you know. I mean, artistically, everybody was very much together, but just the material, it was like a nightmare. And then you would feel weird when you were allowed to leave every night. I'm exaggerating that a little bit, but it's material that's harrowing and kind of uplifting all at the same time.
I kind of felt that way about What's Up, Doc, to be honest. Kidding. I mentioned that movie, folks, because Mr. Pendleton has not just done theater. He has had quite a movie career, including being in the Peter Bogdanovich film, What's Up, Doc, with, I can't remember the name of that lead actress. What's her name?
You refer, of course, to Barbara Streisand.
That's it, Barbara Streisand. See, I'm not gay, so it's not completely on the tip of my tongue all the time. But what was she like?
If you can't act with Barbara Streisand, you can't act. She is so there. She magnetizes. Her reality is so great that she just magnetizes you. She just, all you have to do is look at her, and she's looking at you, and you're in the scene.
In an interview you did, I believe, with the Onion, you mentioned that it was not a wonderful experience doing that crazy slam-bang farcical comedy, and that led you to a truth about movie comedies. What was that?
Well, as I remember, the comedies I've been in that have worked the best, have turned out to work the best, were the ones that were the hardest to make. I mean, because they require so much precision and concentration. And Peter in particular, one of the strengths of that movie, What's Up, Doc, is that the scenes go on much longer than a scene usually goes on in a movie. And he only does one camera setup with everyone in the shot. So everybody has to be on point, and we could not say the lines quickly enough to satisfy him. He was thinking back to those old Howard Hawks comedies from
right.
the 30s, where everybody talks so fast. And if anybody flubbed a tiny bit, we would have to go back and start the whole scene all over again. So it was exhausting. Now, when I saw the movie, I thought, well, that paid off. That really, I mean, he was right.
So do you not usually know, especially in a movie, whether it's going to be good or bad until you see that final cut with an audience?
You never know. Particularly with a comedy. Sometimes you feel when you're making a film, oh, this is brilliant. This is like really working. And then you see it and it ain't happening, you know. And the reverse. So it was so hard to do, I don't think we even had an opinion of it. It was sort of a task. The task was difficult. What Peter did with that, the result of that is it created a real feeling of ensemble among all the actors because we were, in effect, all in the same boat.
It's almost like the military, where you get through 3 weeks of basic training, and
you're
all bond in that way, you know?
Yeah. It was great. The set was extremely relaxing when you weren't actually shooting a scene. I mean, everybody would hang out and talk, but they would hang and talk with each other. We weren't off in our separate places, you know, because we all kind of needed each other so much in the scenes.
So Barbara was one of the gang, as it
Oh,
were.
Totally.
Great. Now, speaking of a comedy that most, I've never seen it, but that most people don't think turned out that well, that you were in, was a movie called Skidoo.
Oh, well, that's very controversial.
Uh-huh.
Some people just love that movie.
Ooh, maybe I should see
it. And others really don't like it at all. It's such a... There's no movie that's like it even remotely. Some people, it just seems arbitrary and like, well, what is this? And other people say, God, this is so original. And and it often shows up in revival houses, you know. And the good thing that came out of it was the first movie in which I had a part of any size at all. And the director was Otto Preminger.
Right.
And he taught me in that film a lot about film acting. So...
What do you remember that he literally taught you? What is something that he told you?
About making it smaller, because up until then I'd only been in plays.
Right.
Making it smaller, and about just the truth at every moment, the absolute truth, because the camera detects anything other than that. And you see a lot of his movies, and the actors in them are terrific, you know. And so I saw how that happened. And also, he just said every take is like opening night in a play, every single day.
Wow.
He just would talk to me about film acting. And he said things that I've remembered ever since, every movie I've ever made.
Staying on Skidoo, one of the reasons people still would be curious to see it are some of the performers in there, including Jackie Gleason. Do you have any memories of working near or with him?
Well, he's a lovely guy. You know, he suffered, and I don't think I'm telling any secrets. he suffered like a lot of, not like some really great comedians do, and he's a great, well, he's a great actor as well as a great kind of a comic actor. I'm getting out of the cab with my friend.
Just reminding folks that literally we're talking to Austin Pendleton as he's traveling, commuting in New York.
Yeah. Jackie suffered from depression a lot. Mm. So he didn't want to rehearse. But it didn't matter because then when you went to shoot the scene, he was right there, you know. So it wasn't the catastrophe that he didn't want to rehearse the way it would be with certain other actors. You know what I mean?
Okay.
He was very sweet. And, of course, I was a nervous wreck because it was the first movie I'd ever been in, really. Full of lines and a couple of other movies. So he was very sweet and patient with me.
Nice. Could you say the same about Groucho Marx, who was also in that movie?
Well, I only had that one little scene with Groucho at the end, but he was exactly like you think he would be. It's a scene in a rowboat in the Pacific Ocean where we're supposedly smoking pot shot at the crack of dawn. So we all stayed overnight at a hotel the night before. So I had dinner with Groucho.
Whoa!
Which was exactly what you would think it would be like.
Because he was still Groucho at that point. He hadn't become old, sort of Gilbert Gottfried Groucho. He was still himself, you know?
Oh, he was just, it was like watching You Bet Your Life, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He was fun. He was, you would say something and he would come back with a really funny remark.
Now, one other actor in Skidoo that I worship. Any memories of Arnold Stang?
I was never in a scene with him, so I don't think I met him even.
So disappointing. So, but by the way, if you want to meet Austin Pendleton, I mean not physically, but to see him live on stage, you are doing a cabaret show.
Yeah.
At Pangea. Yes.
Which is spelled Pangea. Mm-hmm. 178 Second Avenue in Manhattan between 11th and 12th Street. Oh, we did it for 2 dates in May, and it went well, so we've been invited.
Well, who's we?
Me and Barbara Blyer.
Barbara Blyer. So do duets? I mean, what is the show? What are the songs you're doing? Give us a little foreshice.
Well, it's about an hour long, and it's about two friends. Our kind of plot line through it, because you have to have a kind of theme in a cabaret. Our plot line is we're old friends, and we meet at a bar, and we talk about our relationship. We sing. Mm-hmm. About our relationships, and a lot of it is very funny.
Oh.
But then there's some ballads in it, you know, and there are just a lot of great songs by people like Gretchen Cryer and Nancy Ford and Rodgerson Hammerstein and John Buchino and Sheldon Harnick and Jerry Bach and Amanda McBroom, and I mean, there are songs written by people like that and by Nancy Ford and Mimi Turk, and some of them are songs that you heard a million times and some are songs you've never heard at all.
Well, that's the nice thing about cabaret. You can mix them and introduce people.
Yeah. But they kind of follow a theme of two people hanging out in a bar late at night going over their relationships and their lives and the heartaches and the follies and everything of their lives.
Now, forgive me for not knowing this, but is this your first cabaret sortie, as it were?
Yeah, it's the first time. Well, I've done a few in the past, a couple of them with Barbara, actually, in Chicago, but also with other people. I've never done a cabaret alone, and I'm not sure I would want to. But then I've done. But the cabarets I've done before, including the ones with Barbara, were a few years ago. So then when she had the idea that we team up for this one, I got all excited because I hadn't done one in a few years. And of course I've been, as you mentioned, in a lot of another musical with a Jewish theme I was in was by Arthur Miller, Stanley Silverman, called Up from Paradise. It was a musical version of the Book of Genesis.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I played Adam, and the characters are Adam and Eve and God and Lucifer and Cain and Abel and some archangels. And that was done at the Jewish Rep in New York.
Oh my gosh, I remember the Jewish Rep. Wow.
Yeah.
This was already, I guess it was then a revival of the Arthur Miller music. Or was he there? Did you meet him?
Oh, No, he was there. Yeah, it was the New York premiere of the musical. He adapted it from a play of his, which had a different title, and the play had been done. But the musical is a whole new work. First of all, it's a musical.
Wow.
But also, even the play itself, which serves as the basis for the musical, was largely rewritten by Arthur Miller for the musical. So he was there all the time.
And what was he like?
He was funny.
Really?
Oh, he was so funny. He was entertaining and funny. And he had this really dry, kind of, this dry Brooklyn-accented humor, you know. And his notes that he would give us were extraordinarily precise and, I mean, helpful. But he didn't give that many of them. He wouldn't go on and on. He would just say, "Why? I think you could look at it this way." And you would go, "Oh, yeah, right, great, you know."
And it was good that he was able to defer to the director of the
musical. Oh, yeah, he was always respectful of the director.
Because if I were the director of an Arthur Miller play and Arthur Miller was still there, I would be like, "Okay, you win. Whatever you say, Arthur." You know? Yeah. I don't know. How do you sometimes do that as a director yourself when you're working with really famous and respected people, or playwrights, or actors, and you have to kind of be the one in charge and put your foot down?
Well, there's a book of interviews by a guy. The interviews were conducted by a guy named Jeff Young, of the great director Elia Kazan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, you know, 100 and some pages book. It's just a whole long series of interviews that this man, Jeff Young, did with Kazan, I'd say in the mid-90s. It's a wonderful book. You know, Kazan is very forthcoming, and they talk about...
Well, we know he names names. Just kidding.
Yeah, and they talk about that.
Mm.
And Jeff Young makes it clear he isn't happy about it, and so they talk about that. I mean, it's a very frank, open book. And, of course, it's terrific when they get into the work. I mean, just doing the work. And at one point, I forget the question Jeff Young asks, but I was reading this on a plane on my way to direct a play in Chicago at the Steppenwolf, where I remember. And I was literally on the plane going there. And Jeff Young asks Kazan a question in one of the chapters of the book, and Kazan's answer is, "Who says the director has to be right all the time?"
Hmm.
It really cracked my mind open. It really, I thought, that's marvelous. He's talking about the openness of a dialogue with actors, with presumably playwrights, with producers.
But do you ever fear losing the control if you start to give in on that, not just once in a blue moon, but if you start to admit that you might be wrong? Are you afraid that certain chaos or distrust?
Actually, what it builds is a greater trust.
Greater trust, yeah.
So you have a control that's more, that doesn't depend on being right all the time.
Hmm.
See, you have to be able to, you have to be able to say to an actor, if the actor says, "This isn't working," you have to be able to say, "Okay, show me something else."
Hmm.
And then if that works, you have to be able to say, "Oh, I see what you mean." And then a trust gets built up so that it's not like a rigid line between. And the same thing with the playwright. I mean, when you're directing a play and the playwright's around, whether it's a revival or a new play, you get in fights with the playwrights.
Hmm.
I fought with almost every one of them at one point or another.
Oy.
But then you come to some kind of terms, you know what I mean? And
Can you give an example? I mean, I would love to have an actual real example of a fight that turned out hopefully better from the fight.
With very few exceptions, they always turn out for the better because you have a real frank exchange of views and it takes you somewhere. You, in defending what you're doing, you have to clarify what you're doing. You have to say, "This is the reason why I'm doing this way," and the director says, "Well, I'm not seeing it." So then you have to defend it and say, and often the playwright will say, even when you're actually having an argument, will say, "Well, if that's what you want, then find a way of doing it that makes that clear."
Hmm.
And so it can be very productive. Only once in a long while does it just end in the stalemate.
Well, do you remember like a glorious moment when an argument ensued and something amazing came out of it?
Oh, God, there are so many of them, I can't even think of one.
Oh, okay.
It happens on almost every show when the playwrights are around. Every once in a while, it comes to... And sometimes, like, a playwright will say, look, I just, if they come in and they see it and they say, you know, I disagree with just about everything you're doing. And then you say, okay, give me a list. Yeah. Now, if they go that far, you have to, you sort of have to make a lot of concessions. But usually it's a few things they get upset about.
Okay.
And so you can negotiate those.
We are having a marvelous verbal negotiation with the delightful Austin Pendleton telling us about his life, his career, his work. Do you have a favorite piece that you've directed, like the best directing experience you ever had?
No, I don't.
Does that mean so many of them have been wonderful, I hope?
No, I try not to think that way. Because when you start comparing things to each other, then, I don't know, it just distorts it somehow. But every time out, it's always a struggle, virtually always a struggle. And it should be. You have a lot of people working together, all of them of a creative temperament. So if you start saying, well, I hope this experience is going to be as great as that one we had last year when I did so-and-so, as soon as you start to think that way, you've created a problem for yourself, and possibly even a problem for the people you're working with.
Speaking of directors, you were in a remake of The Front Page, a film remake, directed by Billy Wilder.
That's right.
Any memories of him? Oh, not to mention your co-stars in there, Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, by the way.
Yeah, and Carol Burnett, yeah, right.
Her too.
Yeah. Billy Wilder was a demanding sweetheart.
Okay.
He would say things like, I have such respect for your work, I couldn't possibly release the scene to the public the way you just played it.
Okay.
How can you resist that? You know what I'm saying?
That's good. You have to remember that one. Did you ever direct a movie?
Oh, no. No, I never have, no.
How come? Why, you know, most actors want to direct. You do direct theater all the time. Why did you never go that step?
It's never like the few times I've ever been approached about it, I would have problems with the script and it just never quite panned out, you know what I mean? And I guess I wasn't obsessed about it, so I didn't. But every once in a while, for some years, a project would come my way, but often it would break down in discussions about the script, you know?
Okay.
And when you shoot a film, the script has to be there. See, in a play, you can maybe get revisions during rehearsals. The play, you can say the playwright is not. But in the film, you've shot the scene. So you can't go back and reshoot it. So I think when you shoot a film, you have to, the first day of shooting, you have to have the script. Now, every once in a while, there are directors who are able to work around that. But you have to have a script that's all set to go the first day, which is not as true when you go in rehearsal for a play.
Huh. Now, also, speaking of movies, you were the subject of a recent movie.
Oh, yeah, a documentary, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is that released yet? Is that officially, I mean, I would play at festivals. Is it available, or will it be soon, or?
I mean, for a while the trailer, which I've never seen, was available on YouTube.
The trailer is still there.
Yeah, I think the film probably, when it's played at some festivals, it'll probably be on those things like Netflix and stuff. I presume, I don't know.
Well, how did you feel about being followed around and being part of a documentary about you?
I wasn't followed around all that much. A whole lot of it is interviews with other people.
Ah, okay.
And I wasn't really followed around. I mean, they interviewed me a couple of times and clips from that show up. And the movie in its present form is only 20 minutes long.
Oh, I did not realize it was a short film. Because there is a scene in there, and this gets back to something ostensibly Jewish. They do have a scene of you in the bathroom, where you're looking for a bathroom, you have to change your clothes. And I noticed, above your belly button, you have a hernia scar. Is that true?
No, that was a different operation.
Oy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you okay? How have you been?
I'm fine. That was a few years ago.
Okay, yeah. Just wondering, because I know from hernias, believe me. It's kind of a Jewish thing.
I've had them a couple of times, but I've never had an operation.
Wait, you've had hernias without an operation?
Well, where they kind of got under control, where there was going to be surgery, and then this happens maybe twice in my life. Oh. And the surgeon said, no, I think it's under control, I think.
Oh. Mazel, you are a lucky man, let me tell you.
I'm a very lucky man, yeah.
Hey, do you have wife, kids, all that sort of thing?
I have a wife and a daughter.
Mit Mazel. So you get income, of course, from doing all the TV and the movies, but you are able to have a life in the theater, essentially, and support and live okay in New York.
And live okay, yeah. The money that really helps is when either from the movies or from TV. But also, I teach at HB Studio. I teach acting. So, and that's a constant job. So it doesn't pay a huge amount, but it's a consistent job.
Well, you're in your, what is it, late 60s, early 70s at this point? What?
I'm 76.
76, Mazel. So could you at some point retire if you had to? Or do you have to teach until you're 85?
I could, I think, because I'm all in the unions, you know.
And oh, Mazel.
So you have a pension, and then, of course, you have your Social Security and stuff. But I don't think in terms of retiring.
On the first day of your class at H, because you teach both acting and directing at two different places. So
the directing I only taught for like 3 or 4 years. That was at the New School.
Oh.
But I've taught acting at HB Studio forever. But see, it's a lot of the same students from term to term, so there's sort of a flow to it, you know what I mean?
So wait. In other words, you'll teach the course and then the same person will come back?
Well, I mean, typically in the class there are about 20 people. Maybe half of the people will, a third of the people will be new each term, and they'll pick up the way we've already been working. And then there are people who repeat, and then there are people who study and they come back maybe 3 terms later. It's very informal the way at the HB Studio.
Huh. So is it that you help them with what they happen to be working on? I assume they're already acting. Or do you have assignments? Do you have scenes that you want them to do and work on?
Yeah. It's called a scene study class.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to have to wrap this up.
Oh, sure.
Soon because we have the cabaret tonight.
Oh, of course. Yeah. How could I forget? Everybody, make sure you see Austin Pendleton and Barbara Blyer in their cabaret. What is the name of it, by the way?
It's called Late Nights in Smoky Bars.
Late Nights in Smoky Bars. That is at Pangea, which is on 178 Second Avenue over on 11th Street. It's playing on July 27th.
Between 11th and 12th Street.
On
2nd Avenue.
On 2nd Avenue.
Pangea, P-A-N-G-E-A.
July 27th and August 9th, so you've got 2 chances to see them. And also, you are directing a play for the Mint Theatre Company from mid-July until mid-September, called A Day by the Sea, a revival of a play by N.C. Hunter.
Right.
And it's going to be at the Samuel Beckett Theatre. The Mint used to have their own space, but now they...
Yes.
Find out the information. It's called A Day at the Sea. So, last question for Austin Pendleton before I let you go. You had some success writing plays. You wrote Orson's Shadow and Booth and Uncle Bob. Is it that you don't have time to write more? Because you probably should.
I probably should, but I don't have the temperament of a writer. I'm in awe of writers, people who are able to sit down and write every day. I don't have that kind of discipline. I do okay with the kind of discipline where you're acting or directing and there's a schedule and you have to show up and all that. I'm now writing a musical with Josh Schmidt and Todd Almond.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little, or is it too early? You don't want to let the camera...
Oh, no. A lot of it's written already. It's about the life of Gogol, G-O-G-O-L, the 19th century comic writer who lived in Russia.
The nose guy. Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. Well, we look forward to seeing that. We look forward to seeing you in cabaret and to seeing your work for many years from now. Austin Pendleton, best of success in everything that you do. And thank you so much for being with us.
I really enjoyed this. Well, I really have.
Well, I hope we can do it again.
Very good interviewer.
Thank you. We barely scratched the surface. Please come back sometime soon. How's that?
I would love that, okay?
Shalom to you.
And to you too, Rabbi. Okay.
Bye-bye.